Socrates would not have approved of lame excuses.
And I promise to begin exploiting my family before the end of the day.
Nice suit. Thank you.
Very good. You get a gold star.
Frequencies open on the new year 3015. You are listening to Treknologics listening post number 161 that goes with a bunch of Treknologics you probably listened to in 2014. First up, Space Mailbag.
This one is from Trek Chew. Hello, crew. Oh boy, this one is definitely one of my three favorite Voyager episodes, counting them both as one. I may have issues with Seven's character, nothing to do with Jerry Ryan, but more with the sorry excuse for an outfit they made her wear. But my word, she brought some serious kick to the show that it needed, in my opopinion. Kes was too, innocent, well-behaved. It's kind of hard to pin down, but for the most part, my reaction to her leaving was a shrug and, I don't care. Now, Seven, on the other hand, she was awesome. If only her costume designer hadn't been 14 years old.
True that.
Bill seems to be in a hollow emergency simulation.
Bill really wants to give some feedback on this.
She brought conflict, she brought humor, and she brought something else I like very, very much. Trek work referencing other Trek. Case in point, Year of Hell, I think part two, where Harry and Torres are stuck in the turbo lift, one of them has the other guest, the Phoenix. Seven solves that riddle because the Borg were present at these events.
Yeah.
Pure gold. And I think it was part two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Long story short, far more interesting as a character than Kes ever was. Though they did spruce her up a bit in seasons two and three. Mind you, the second half of season seven is best forgotten in parts.
I don't think we've done too many season sevens.
No, we
probably not.
Or if we did, we forgot them.
Well, as you'll see in an email we get shortly after this, we haven't done too many Voyagers.
Oh.
Does Treknologic Analyzer back that up?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Okay.
I also think that she was right to consider not taking the role. If I read Robert Beltran right, he was kind of surprised how much he would be reduced to that role, and I'm sorry, that's naive at best. The original series, certainly not, and maybe not the Next Generation, but after that, from the moment they started casting Deep Space Nine, everyone knew going in what that would do to their careers. For example, some months ago I saw Jerry Ryan as an extra in a very late-in-the-show Matlock episode, and my first thought was, my word, temporal investigations won't like that. It's the same way every time I see a Trek actor in another role, with the exception of Sir Patrick Stewart and Simon Pegg. It even was that way when I saw Relaunch Sulu Guy in some sort of show I've forgotten the name and even the genre of.
Was it Selfie?
Or...
It's an email, so we really can't ask him.
Mythbusters?
this person will be listening.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. It shows the woman has some brains, meaning Jerry Ryan.
Yes.
Yeah. As for Harry, I kind of liked him. He was sort of the lovable dork. and I'd like to point out that that's Trek Chew, that's not me.
Yes.
He's half right.
I know what it is. Chris can't have the word able with Harry Kim in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
We don't want to call him the love dork.
Well, I mean, he kind of was.
Yeah. I think that nails him.
Yeah, that's true, especially with that scene for Seven.
Yep. See?
So you probably meet a lot of people.
So stupid. I can't believe I said that in this hot space, babe. Oh, such a dork. I'm a love dork. Such a love dork.
He's just not able.
No.
Now let's do the rest of it in sequence. Number one, when Seven is introduced, the I is probably similar to what was used in Best of Both Worlds when Locutus is introduced. And that line is probably the only one in the entire time before she's disconnected where she really is only speaking for herself and not the collective. Number two, agree on the distance issue.
Proud that we were complaining it was going to take them so long to go across.
Oh, yeah.
Space.
Yeah.
They get kind of just wrapped up real quick.
Yeah. Well, you know, they only have 45 minutes. Number Number three, I think Chakotay sucked as a first officer in this. Janeway was right, and he should have done what she asked. He had the perfect chance to bend the Borg to his will and did not use it. Riker would have done it, as would Spock and Kira. Hell, even T'Pol would have.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's really saying something.
Yep. But it's true.
Yes.
You know what they say about the truth?
Hurts. Or
no, longer than truth. Death, darkness.
I mean, that's torture. Torture hurts.
It's hurtable.
The truth is just true.
Oh, no, love hurts, according to that song.
Right.
Yeah. At the same time, you're right about Chuckle's motivations, but my word, did he act stupid. Number four, Seven and her magic voice. Well, who's to say she didn't tap directly into the comm system with her Borg tech and only spoke with her mind?
For listeners, since this was like a month ago, that was when they had decompressed that section and she was speaking without any atmosphere.
Oh, right.
With her mind.
Oh, nice.
But she was moving her mouth.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that's maybe just
it's just automatic.
That's an automatic.
Maybe she wired her vocal cords directly into the comm system. So they just had to vibrate.
Right. Okay.
And then Trek 2 put a winky smiley face type thing right after that and says, live long and podcast Trek 2.
Next up, Bill.
This is from Prometheus 117. Greetings, crew of the Relativity. First, I wanted to wish you happy holidays and a Merry Trekmas, and thank you for another year of great podcasts. Thank you for all you do and sacrifice for our entertainment. Well, that's really nice. Thanks, man.
Yeah. It was a great vacation.
Yep.
It was nice having a little time off. I'm going to go rapid fire since it's been a while. I'm glad he wrote that for me to say. Reunion. On the argument of would Duras be acquitted if Worf's challenge failed? I believe no. Duras acted as a coward and would likely have been given a coward's death for killing the ambassador. Good point. Gowron's mannerisms are hilarious to say the least, and how great was it for Worf to drop the lumberjack finishing move on Duras? Yeah, it was pretty satisfying. It's a shame they never made good use of Duras' son in a later episode. I think he has a right to vengeance, but maybe that's a better question left for Jane in legal. Defiant. I have a theory on Thomas Riker, and it's not a pretty one. The Jem'Hadar execute him at the start of the Dominion War. They wiped out the Maquis. Why not political prisoners? Which makes me wonder, were Captain Maxwell the Wounded and Mike Eddington released when war broke out? In the shortage of officers, I'm sure they bent the rules.
Wow.
I would hope not.
Yeah. No.
Scorpion. No surprise this episode ranks so high. Best new music since Best of Both Worlds. Cutting-edge special effects. Action. Carrie mentioned why the Borg don't do some Transformers thing. In the Activision game Star Trek II Armada 2, the Borg were able to fuse 8 cubes into a massive fusion cube.
Ah! Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
It would be cool if it was a magic 8-ball.
I know that you could shake up and get answers to your questions in life. Oh, that would be really helpful. But the fusion cube might have been helpful against such an imposing enemy. The Kesk dream has got to be one of the funniest moments in Voyager. It's even better to know that it's because Carrie spooked her.
I mean,
yeah, sorry. No, I'm feeling it. That's all for today. Look forward to next week. Be safe this holiday and live long and podcast. Prometheus 117 of the Breen Confederacy.
Bill, you do know the original meaning of LLAP, right?
Well, yeah, duh. Oh, do you think he meant live long and prosper?
That's what I would think.
Oh, well, everyone sort of goes with it. All right, fine. Break my
Everyone says live long and podcast.
I'm sorry. Am I really that far off?
It's become so popular, Colin has now
trademarked
the original meaning of LLAP.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, most people when they
Bill
type
Colin.
Well, in my defense, in the feedback – in the listening post here, when most people actually type it out, they do say podcast.
Yep.
I think we see more podcasts than we see prosper. So forgive me for going with the flow, Mr. Hologram.
Well, and let's be clear that podcasting is not where you prosper.
No.
Financially. So you got to do one or the other.
Right. Yes.
Follow the podcast, not prosper.
You certainly do them in separate stages, separate venues.
Yes. Our next one is from MLV. Hi, guys. This is Michael, or MLV. I'm writing about a disturbing trend brought to light by the Technologic Analyzer. One of the bar charts is percent reviewed episodes per series. It shows a much higher percentage reviewed of the original series and Enterprise at 27.5 and 22.9%, and a very low percentage of Voyager, 11.1%, with Next Generation and DS9 in between. At this rate, you will run out of original series and Enterprise long before you finish the Voyager episodes.
Uh-oh.
The reason for this, I think, is twofold. The main reason is that Enterprise and the original series are shorter series, but your rotation goes to them with the same rate as the others. You watch as many Enterprise and TOS as the other three. The other reason is that people are more likely to request episodes from the other series than Voyager. I propose the following solution. Don't include both Enterprise and the original series in every rotation. Instead, alternate them. Mm. So you would do the first three and then a TOS and then the first three and then a Voyager instead of just alternating them in every rotation.
Right. TNG, DS9, and Voyager, then either a TOS or an Enterprise.
Right.
Yep. And that would be a rotation.
So for every 28 episodes, you would have 7 each of the Next Generation, DS9, and Voyager, 3 TOS, and 4 Enterprise. That way, the number of episodes reviewed would be proportional to the length of the series, and you won't find yourselves running out of original series episodes and left to drift the Delta Quadrant with nothing but Voyager episodes to keep yourself company.
Oh, that is a good point.
This brings me to the other issue, which is the lack of Voyager listener picks. According to the list of episodes from 2011 through 13 that were marked chosen by, there were 2 original series picks, 2 Next Generation picks, 4 DS9 picks, and 1 Enterprise pick, and 0 Voyager picks.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it is a fair point.
That's really not funny. That's very sad.
I think if you were to, when you got a listener pick, replace a regular rotation episode with that, that would take care of that issue. Mind you, this plan just corrects the problem going forward. But of course, the damage has already been done. You may want to squeeze in some extra Voyager episodes to fix the damage that's already been done. And for the record, I don't really like Voyager that much.
I think that's the real problem there.
I'd rather you watch a few more now so that we aren't stuck with just Voyager episodes left in the future. Let me know if any of this is confusing or all of this is confusing.
All right. How about signed Michael MLV.
Yes. Yes.
I'll do you one better. How about we double do just TNG TNG, DS9 and Voyager for a few rotations to get us caught up on Voyager.
Oh, it's a new year. We could do the year of Voyager.
Oh, God.
Oh.
It could be our listeners' own year of hell.
Oh, my God.
You know what? I think that's a great idea. Let's plan that for 2016.
Oh, my
as
God.
As long as we're not doing it this year. By the way, I'm quitting at the end of this year.
I would say that there are at least 2 that I know of exclusively Voyager podcasts, and those are the Delta Quadrant.
Woo, Delta Quadrant.
Yeah. And actually, they're about to wrap up Voyager. They're in the seventh season.
Oh, my goodness. What are they going to do next?
They've just been hustling. Who knows?
I know.
Maybe they'll, let's see. What could they do next? I can't think of anything that has lots of spinoffs like Star Trek does, where they do the last spinoff, or not the last, I guess second to last. What else has a spinoff? Nothing. I don't know.
let's let them worry about what they're
gonna do. They could do Crusade. The spinoff to Babylon 5.
Weren't there like 5 episodes of that?
That'd be a quick one.
Yeah.
They're not the spinoff podcast.
They could do a year of spinoffs, though. No, they're a Voyager podcast, and when they're done with Voyager, the podcast is over, right?
Well, no, they might go on and they might do other ones.
But it won't be the Voyager podcast.
Oh, maybe it'll be the Voyager
something else podcast.
The Voyager book podcast. And then when they're done with that, it can be the Voyager fan fiction podcast.
And then they'll start making their own Voyager fan films.
Oh, my Delta Quadrant friends, please ignore
all of the suggestions.
My Treknologic crew, because clearly, the lack of experimentation has affected their minds.
So what was the second Voyager podcast?
Oh, yeah, I was getting there.
Yeah.
To the Journey is how they say it there. And
To the Journey.
And they there they kind of take a concept and go over a concept or a character and go over the character over all the seasons, which is kind of interesting. Now to address the actual issue that's brought up, instead of diverting it like I was.
Oh, and you know, also I noticed that MLV didn't mention the animated series. You know, where we should put that in there. Kind of odd.
He didn't mention that at all. Most people count that as part of the original series because, taken together, they would be the.
Oh yeah,
that 5-year would be mission.
Yeah, the fourth season.
Yeah. Mm.
I'm kind of glad we didn't see most of those episodes as. Real episodes.
So lonely.
We did actually. I kind of thought this through, and I thought about actually the exact solution you had talked about. Part of the problem is if we're kind of doing a block of four, and we differ, you know, who edits and who does clips. If we did a block of four. And there's four people on the podcast, then it turns out that you only edit or clip the kind of the same series, I guess, you know, original series.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice in that we get to rotate that around and, you know, get to clip or edit.
Right.
Because I call not it for the Voyager one then.
The Voyager year.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely best if we're clipping. And I, as a clipper, I definitely appreciate the fact that I clip all the different series. Like, I don't want to be stuck in just doing one thing.
Oh, yeah, no way.
And while each episode has its own kind of thing, you know what I mean? Each series has its own kind of thing, too. So,
and we might as well go ahead and announce it here. That way our core listeners, the ones that actually listening to the listening post, which is probably 1/10 of who listens to the podcast.
Right.
So for this year, we're doing something very special, very different. And it's because at least we've had 2 listener requests, or maybe even 3. And another listener request for this year just brought up the question again. And so we decided to really tackle this head on. A lot of people have said we have not reviewed, I don't think, anything from the seventh season, yes, to use the American term.
Yes.
Deep Space Nine.
An American show.
Right.
Yes. And we have it. And we've said, let's do that to a former listener request. And so we decided, we talked about this as a podcast crew, and we have decided that this year, contrary to what we were talking about as far as Voyager, in fact, quite the opposite, is this year is going to be, in many cases, the Deep Space 9 year. And in this case, we are going to do, throughout the year, the final 7 episodes of Deep Space 9.
Everyone's breathing a sigh of relief because, you know, they were worried Chris is going to say, we're never going to review them and the podcast is over.
So, yes, that means we won't be jumping around in Deep Space 9 this year. It's going to be in each episode will be in a row.
With the exception of the first one, which was a listener pick.
Right.
From Ben. So what we're going to do is between each of the Deep Space Nine episodes, we're going to kind of refresh our palate with a one of our kind of standard rotation ones.
Right.
So everything else, essentially. So it'll be a standard rotation and then a Deep Space Nine and then a standard rotation. And we won't have a rotation of Deep Space Nine because we're doing that between each episode. So it's going to be Deep Space Nine heavy, but it does allow us to go through and not single pick these Deep Space Nine episodes that are often, but not that are very much linked to each other.
Yeah.
Because like we, you know, we're reviewing a lot of Deep Space Nine. So we know that there's a big carryover between Deep Space Nine episodes.
Towards the end.
Especially building up towards the Dominion War.
Yeah. The last seven episodes are like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. You know, in fact, when you watch it, it's part one through part seven, essentially.
Right.
That's what they list
it
as.
And that's and it's good to do it that way. Otherwise, if we were to break them up, you wouldn't have that connective quality to it, you know?
Right.
Right.
And that's something we talked about earlier about the nature of DS9 and one of the things that made it special. So this is a chance to kind of just, you know, celebrate that and then to take a look at it and break down these seven episodes that ended this series.
And yeah, in many places also, I see it listed as one of seven, two of seven.
Right.
Right.
We're also doing it this way because we didn't want to do one giant long 14-hour podcast.
Yes.
No doubt.
We could have done a pod-a-thon with it.
Oh my goodness gracious.
I would definitely call not it on editing that one.
Not it.
I call it not it on even being there.
The clips, getting the clips for it.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, getting the clips for it, that wouldn't be super fair. We just would take the same amount of time.
Right.
Hey, you just need to sit and
record it end to end.
15 minutes of quotes from the episode, and that's it, from all of them.
Yeah.
Just 15 minutes for the last seven
seasons. That's right. We're cramming the whole seven episodes into one normal two-hour podcast.
Yeah, not going to happen.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, but having said that, with DS9... I feel there's a semicolon or a comma or something with a conjunction there to address the Voyager issue.
Well, we could we'll have to think about that for 2016.
Yeah,
and it's also the original series issue, the Enterprise issue.
Yeah,
yeah, they have just less episodes.
Right. So we'll think about it and figure out what we come up with 16, maybe for 2016. Maybe we'll come up with the Year of Hell and run through Voyager. I'm sure the Delta Quadrant really appreciates us.
Oh, you're calling it the Year of Hell.
Well, it is the name of an actual episode.
I actually like Voyager.
Right. I mean, we're obviously playing on this perception that Voyager is the weakest of all the series or something. And
Which
makes reviewing them fun when it's really good.
Yes,
because you're like, wow, this is really good.
Yeah, you're surprised when they get a good one.
So anyway, I mean, you know, maybe if we made it the Year of Hell for Voyager, I think we should just pick the, you know, bottom 20.
Oh god.
Oh no!
The top seven.
Throw us a bone.
Or we should do the final, like the last three episodes of Voyager and the. Like three others or something. I don't know. I have nothing.
This is the way we figure out things, and you know, maybe it's not the best way, but
yeah, this is the way we figure out things. Chris throws out horrible ideas, and then the rest of us come up with better ones.
And then we thank throw God darts to determine which one we do.
Yeah, right. Well, thank God for the rest of us. And everyone listening, you're all welcome.
So. Wow, this was a really, really long response to MLV's email.
Yes.
It raised a lot of, you know, he's kind of a complicated issue, and it isn't necessarily an easy fix.
A little peek into the behind the scenes of Treknologic.
Yeah. The insanity that is Treknologic.
Never mind those four people behind the curtain.
To be fair.
Quick, give me a sound effect.
It's chaotic at the beginning, but we have our list of everything we're recording for this season.
Yes.
And we keep track of it. And
yep.
So it gets very organized very quickly.
And I've already been working on mine.
Yep.
Nice. Okay.
Next up, from Trek Yards. Hello, my name is Stuart Foley, the inventor of Foley sound effects. I'm sorry.
Wow.
That's not what he said.
Wow.
I thought Stuart Foley was, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough.
That's Stuart Smalley.
Oh, that's right.
This guy's been around for like 100 years of doing movies.
Yeah.
This guy must be ancient. Think of what we could learn from him. Wait a minute. You made that up. I'm looking at the letter now. You made that up.
My name is Stuart Foley, the host and co-creator of Trek Yards, a weekly web series in which we examine ships from the Star Trek universe and give you detailed information about them in general discussion about their place in Star Trek history, as well as design aesthetics and behind-the-scenes facts, and even in-universe information regarding how they work and operate. We look at all ships, big and small, lots of screen time, too little or no screen time, as we talk about both in-canon as well as non-canon ships. For example, the Fasa ship designs, that's from the role-playing game, I believe, and Starfleet Battles, maybe. I don't know if Fasa did that. As well as fan-made ships, and even ships from games such as Starfleet Battles, Star Trek Online, Star Trek books, etc., etc. There's no doubt about it. I'm saying, you know, here they like ships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if they talked about the cool bug ship yet.
Oh, yeah, the one that we only saw the once.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love that ship.
And the captain's, what was it, the captain's what?
Captain's yacht. We called it the slug ship. Yeah, the captain's yacht.
The show has episode clips, pictures, and custom, yes, it's on YouTube, custom designed CGI ship renders done by my partner Samuel. We have released 4 episodes thus far, and starting in December, sorry, that was last month.
Yeah.
We're bumping up our releases to every Saturday.
Wow.
Sounds like a tough schedule to me.
Yeah,
we had that schedule. We didn't like it.
There's no harm in going back to fortnightly.
Yeah.
Especially with Mad doing some your own CGI there.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I got to check them out.
I think there's a lot of Star Trek ships, just, you know, the CGI is where you can go ahead and download them yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But then there's some that they're describing that sounds like they'd have to create the model from scratch or find someone who did. I suppose there's a community of people who are making that, though. That's still, it's really cool.
Please feel free to check us out on Facebook, Twitter, or visit www. Do I have to say that anymore? I don't think so.
No one says www anymore.
.com. Okay, so trekyards.com. TrekYards.com to take a look at a few episodes and even learn more about us. We would love to have the opportunity to share our love of all things Star Trek ship related. Hope you have a wonderful day. Stuart Foley and Samuel Cockings, the Trek Yards team. It is pretty neat. I watched a few in December. It was nice.
Cool. I look forward to checking it out.
Okay. So, voicemails. And this is pretty cool. As she did for us last year when we came back from our Trekmas vacation, Maress volunteered to read a whole bunch of our listener feedback for us so that we can listen to them as voicemails.
Well, she's our communications officer, right?
Yes. Yes, she is.
There we go.
So we have 8 new feedbacks as read by Maress. So we'll start with our first one from Dr. Brian.
From Dr. Brian. Dear crew, I hope your Trekmas gifts were sufficient and that your new season is going well. I am, however, amazed that you have missed a great opportunity to catch a memorable Paris moment in The Gift. As Kes bestows the gift to the crew, Paris expresses his amazement. Why? Did he not experience velocities greater than what Voyager normally can achieve?
No.
To attribute the Auld Lang Syne syndrome, should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Or B, oh, ship log, we're going to de-evolve again.
Yeah.
That's it.
Disavowing the episode that shall not be named. But for those who lack the ability to forget, Paris' expression seems disingenuous. Next, you will tell me that the Delta Flyer never existed because the data logs are missing. I just found this to be a bit funny. May the Doctor vicariously stimulate your new season. Sincerely, Dr. Brian.
Oh, wow. You.
So this next one's from Elena.
I'm Elena. Hello, everyone. Sorry for my first mail, but I'm still not used to my new communicator completely. I actually intended to write a rather long message, but after starting over several times after everything was deleted by my, quote, smartphone, I got a little impatient, so here's the short version. I really liked Reunion, and your review of it even more. You said a lot of things already, so let me just add this. I loved Alexander always asking why. It's something little kids do all the time. When I was small, I would regularly unnerve my brother with it. Then he would tell me to stop it, usually combining it with a threat, such as sending me straight to bed without watching Star Trek. Only he usually told me specifically to stop asking why. Now, in German, there are several words for the English why, the most usual being wieso, weshalb, and warum. Now, when he told me to stop asking wieso, I'd just go on asking warum. We would usually go on like that until I got to for what reason, upon which he would tell me not to ask any question containing a W. After that, I was silent, trying to find a way of asking why without using any W in the question. What I like about the scene with Alexander is that it makes him look normal. He's not a freaky, all-knowing genius like we've already seen them, or completely focused on being an honorable warrior, as you might expect it from a Klingon child. He's just like any other kid, going on his parents' nerves, asking questions. That's it for now, Elena. P.S. We are told we might get proper internet by Thursday. If so, my next message will be a voicemail again. But no promises.
Oh, man. That, yeah, that whole Y scene. It's interesting that it touched you so much.
Well, and that they have so many different ways to say why in German.
I know, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, that was one of Chris's favorite little games back in middle school.
Why? Why?
What?
Why?
What are you talking about?
Why? 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 Why?
All right. Our next one is from Jay from Brazil.
Jay from Brazil. Hi, guys. As everybody seems to be already in the holidays, I'll try to be quick. In the Defiant review, you asked about the O'Brien Riker wrangle. My answer is, I don't have any idea either. The only possibility could be that, after his beaming incident, he is totally against anyone who works in transporter rooms. You have mentioned also the possibility of Riker Prime being the captain of Voyager. Some real-world difficulties could have made this impossible. First, Jonathan Frakes was leaving a 7-year job in TNG, and probably wouldn't have liked to stay in the franchise. The second question should be the intent of the producers to have a woman as a captain. In the matter of a continuation of Riker's story in DS9, I would have loved it, especially since DS9 isn't in my faves. To me, only some Klingon arcs, a few shapeshifter episodes, and the Garak spy stories are good, leaving most of the show ranked as meh. Patience, leave the big chickens alive, and wait the fat old man if he survives the doctor. Live long and prosper. Thank you for the fishes. Jay, Brazil.
You know, I think, I don't know, it's like kind of like, you know, the Star Trek curse. You know, once you're in there, you're typecast as it forever in many cases.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe it could have been like Michael Dorn, and, you know, Jonathan Frakes may have, if he had the option, you know, why not extend your career, your Star Trek career, another 7 years?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the fact is, they were on to making TNG movies, and he was directing some of those. That's so his and when asked, and I remember an early interview with him when he was talking about, like, when he first took the role, people were like, "Wow, you might end up with a career like Leonard Nimoy or William Shatner." And he was like, "Are you kidding me? That sounds great! Like, yeah. I'd be more than happy to have a career like that that goes that many years." And, you know, you do other things and you direct. And then, and since he has aspirations toward directing, because it came out recently that he reached out to the people that do the Trek Abrams, I mean, the Abrams Trek, that when the third one was kind of up for grabs, he's like, "Well, hey, I know something about directing Trek. I'd be happy to." So, you know, he probably was identifying with Leonard Nimoy a lot. So, yeah, there you go. I mean, I think he would have probably been open to the idea, but they were, you know, he was in fact directing films in the Trek franchise at that time. So
right.
I'm certain that directing was more important to him at that point, but I'm sure he would have been more than open to a recurring guest spot or something as Thomas Riker. The idea of him being on Voyager though would probably be a bit too much.
Although I do have to admit, him as adult Finn from Adventure Time is pretty funny.
I didn't know that, but it's hilarious.
So our next one is from JD.
From JD. Wow. Mind blown has become an overused cliche and a half on the internet over the years. But every once in a great while, more often than blood moons and more often than hell freezing over, the term mind-blowing really is applicable and appropriate. The crew's discussion about the alternate timeline Trek show, where Thomas Riker made captain before Will, because his daring feats on dangerous Starfleet missions earned him highest honors and commendations, even so far that he was captain of Voyager instead, and then admiral in Nemesis. Oh my gosh, mind blown. Always lamented Thomas Riker was introduced and written off in a single episode, then brought back for a last hurrah, only to be abandoned for good. Lame. I so badly wish that the technologic character arc for Riker 2.0 had been real instead. Ah, hindsight. Anyways, I had to write in because I lost the phone number for calling in with feedback for the show, and I can't find it on the site anymore. Thought maybe it's inactive now, so email is the backup. But yeah, lots of food for thought about Maquis-bound Riker. Now I want the crew of the Relativity to offer better character resolutions for Jadzia Dax and Trip Tucker.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, maybe when we get to those episodes, we will.
Yeah.
Well, we did address the Tip Truck. Tip Trucker. I keep spinning around. we did address the Trip stuff on that non-Enterprise episode.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. We did.
We did actually talk about that a little bit. And yeah. There's a novel out there that resolves that better. And I apologize for earlier. It's been a couple of months since we recorded that. I had forgotten that we were imagining Thomas Riker as the captain of Voyager, not an officer. And that is, wow, yeah, that is. I take it back. That's actually kind of a cool idea.
Yeah. We should offer our services.
And I think that phone number might still be out there. None of us know it, and we probably wouldn't know how to check it.
So, true. Yeah,
I would stick with sending us emails. I mean, you can still make a voicemail on, like, your phone or something and email that to us.
Yeah, I think that was Admiral Jeff's number, so.
Yeah.
Well, it was a Google number that Jeff had put together.
Right.
Which I'm sure is still functional, but... I mean, we could ask Jeff for it if he remembers it, but I don't know if he will.
Well, let's just limit our options, shall we?
But yeah, but it better way is sending an email, because that way we get the file and it's all nice and secure.
Do a quick sound recording, just tag that, attach it to an email, and boom.
Yep.
We love voicemail.
We love them. It's great. It's great. It's great to hear your voices instead of our own all the time.
All right. And our next one is from Takaran Golem.
From Takaran Golem. Hello to the bridge of the crew from the bowels of the lower decks. It is I, the golem from Takar, or Takara. You know, we never actually refer to our planet by name. I should probably bring this up at our next meeting. Anyway, since I opened up the discussion on Gotham, I should also point out that I agree. The Penguin is the number one reason to watch the show. Reasons 2 and 3 are Harvey Bullock and Alfred, respectively. And the fourth is Nygma, with an asterisk leading to a note about needing more screen time and a plot arc. I still say that plot, coherence, dialogue, and logic are some of its biggest weaknesses, but I still plan on watching it when it comes back. Am I a fool or a fan? Speaking of my defiance, I like Defiant. Suave, semi-evil Riker is fun. Cardassian politics is always a hoot. It's truly a pity we never got to see more of Tom, although revisiting his character at least once is pretty big, considering he seemed like a one-off character, a fun what-if, without any concern about future consequences or references. You know, like discovering the origin of all humanoid species, or killing Harry Kim half a dozen times. Anyway, as far as I'm concerned, we can make some reasonable assumptions about what happened to Tom. Clearly, he escaped by making another transporter double to carry out his sentence. Then, he moved to Ryza under the name of Bill Riker and lived a long life of booze, women, and reckless behavior. Wait, did I
say... I like it.
Ah, here we go. Memory Alpha says it's Takara. We should put some signs up. Anyway, we'll spread the news. Tack out.
The one thing about, I kind of wanted to talk about it. We actually reviewed the episode that's coming up next week. We already did that. And I kind of wanted to say is that it's definitely not a Gene Roddenberry episode.
No.
No, it is not.
Absolutely not.
And one thing that Gene Roddenberry had talked about is that he didn't want his Federation characters to have conflict or, you know, much drama between them.
Right.
Because they're supposed to be kind of perfect.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, right. That was rough. I think that, well, that limits you.
Well, you know what Ronald Moore said about it? He said that, okay, great, you've just taken away what made the original series so great.
Right.
You know, yeah, like,
it's an inner character, you know.
Yeah, they argue. I mean, who knows what the right thing to do is? The different sides of our humanity should be arguing. But Roddenberry was saying that at this point in human history, we should have had all that figured out. And right. We're just, you know, we're just doing the right thing. And it's like, I think maybe DS9 brings this back to a certain extent, too, is that, I'm sorry, but we're still human. We're all human. There is conflict between the crew of the DS9.
Yeah, and when did Chakotay become a little bit interesting is when, in Scorpion, you know, he kind of butted heads with Janeway.
Right, I mean, the best line of his is, listen, I'm no good to you if I don't tell you what I think, and what I think is you're messing up.
Yeah.
And honestly, it seems like she'd done a lot of bullheaded things up to that. Like, you kind of am glad that the first officer say, hey, you know, maybe not be so bullheaded here. But in the end, she was right, and the writers were actually doing something there. They were making a gambit. They were like, see, you know, just trust our captain just a little bit more. You know what I mean? Like, any fan who had those same questions that are now voiced by Chakotay, they're basically answered by, like, just give us a little more time with Janeway and trust us, because she was absolutely right in this case, you know.
That's the other thing is that I kind of – some Star Trek writers I don't think get is, you know, when you bring up something, you need to think of the consequences. What does it have on the what's the effect of it on the universe? When you bring up a new technology, let's not just forget it for right. the rest of the series.
Our next feedback is from Trek Chew.
From Trek Chew. Hello, crew. Not going to rant about Seven's outfit again. I'll simply never talk about it ever again, and didn't even know how much I hate it. They could have given her a rankless engineering uniform. She looked really great in that science one in Relativity. A bit less flowing version of the robes Jerry Ryan wore between shooting, or just made the darn thing less tight, especially the brown one. Fan service is bad enough in anime. Ugh. Anyway, not too much to say on this one, except that you covered it well, and that I really like Jerry Ryan as an actress. The way she develops Seven as a character makes Seven one of my favorite Voyager characters. I think in some ways this was Voyager growing the beard, i.e., the Trek rule that shows get really good during and after season 3. I actually prefer Seven over Kes just because as time goes on, Seven grew, as you said, but she also has the sort of dry, very British humor that I just love. Something else, R.E. the Borg stuff in the ship. Those are Borg implants, as it were, likely put in using nanoprobes and not really meant to be removed. Kind of like when you use plastic zip ties to hold cables together. They're easy to put in, but almost impossible to remove without cutting them away. R.E. the slip-ups. I always thought, since watching the episode for the first time when it aired over here, that it was just part of Seven's process, except for maybe the first one after waking up. It can be interpreted as a Borg persona getting its first cracks, kind of like Hugh in that TNG episode where he is introduced. Anywho, greetings, Trek Chew. P.S. Rewatching Voyager at the moment, and I can't wait for these episodes because I really, really like them.
Definitely. Yep.
Yeah, good stuff.
Next we have another one from Jay from Brazil.
Okay, before you do that,
yeah,
I thought, you know, like, the growing of the beard was kind of that whole, like...
I like that saying.
Yeah, I thought it was that whole, what is that one that talks, they talk in metaphors?
Right, oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
Tamarian?
You know...
I think it's Tamarian's.
Telexian?
What's his name in Jalad on the...
yeah.
Jay from Brazil. Hi, guys. So, Scorpion is ranked as the best of Voyager, eh? Okay, it is an episode without many mistakes, but I can't see any innovation or surprising, exciting script. To me, some episodes centered on the Doctor are better, even having more Neelix. Just a little thing I noticed. 7 of 9 is from Unit Matrix Zero. She was bold and had holes in her body to connect her to the mainframe. Maybe the Wachowski brothers saw this episode. For clarification, No, I do not intend to rule my country. However, Switzerland and Luxembourg could be good options. You know, nothing big to do, and no huge chance that I would totally screw up the place. I only changed my signing because here it is usual in regular mail to write in that way. So, my bad, but don't wish me bad, i.e. governing Brazil. Finished, for your consideration, my suggestion of a soundtrack for the review of the episode The Paradise Syndrome. A song in Portuguese, Alina da Piroja de Cristal. Nothing better than a fake Indian tale to fraud story. Live long and prosper. Thank you for the fishes. Jay from Brazil. P.S. In earlier drafts, the Borg were supposed to be insect-like forms. Now they behave as scorpions. At least they got 2 more legs.
Nice.
Legs are kind of important.
Okay, and our last one is a second one from Takaran Golem.
From Takaran Golem. Hello, Technologic Crew. I'm Pat. Yada, yada, yada. Let's talk about Scorpion. So, as you might have heard, this was a very divisive episode, especially on the Delta Quadrant podcast. Now, for me, every time I rewatched this episode, I was on Janeway's side. Except this last one. Janeway makes her points far more persuasively, whereas Chakotay is too impassive and restrained. And it should be said, it's kind of a killjoy to give up a bad plan and quietly leave, even if that is the smartest and safest thing to do. First, addressing Chakotay's betrayal. Say what you will about him, sticking to the plan would have gotten them killed. Seven says the Borg wouldn't survive long enough for Voyager to escape Borg space. Or, to quote the poet, a cure is worthless if you're dead. So had he tried to stick to the plan, the Borg would have tried to jump them, because a small chance is better than no chance at all. So leaving the Borg on a planet with the cure is a pretty good plan. Why? Well, any ship pursuing them would change course to take the unprotected cure. Once they have this biological weapon, there's no need to bother with Voyager. The Borg would be too busy with the war. Remember those cubes that just passed on by? Yeah, it's standard procedure to ignore ships when there's a more pressing matter.
Bigger fish to fry.
So they have a better chance of survival with the Borg distracted. And even if they don't make it out before the war is over... let's see. What captive would be so foolish as to attempt to travel through Borg space without Borg protection? Oh, right. Janeway in the first 5 minutes of this episode. Janeway even said that she would have turned back, meaning she would have fallen for the Borg's obvious trap. Chakotay's only problem was that he told the Borg the plan without throwing them into a cell first. Really, I don't know why they rebelled anyway. They definitely get the cure with his plan, instead of risking its destruction. I guess only Nixon or Janeway can go to China. Now make a deal with the devil? Come on. What in your short history of devastation and terror would convince you that the Borg are capable of blackmail diplomacy? Every encounter has been inexplicably announcing their attack as though expecting a surrender, and repeated pounding of the enemy until dead or assimilated. That's it. They completely ignore possible threats until they start actually attacking. Nothing about them suggests the nuance of diplomatic reasoning. They see what they want, they take what they want. So it seems like a ridiculously risky gambit for no greater purpose than going home, something intrinsically self-serving. And Janeway doesn't even bother to ask the crew if they want to take the silly risk. On top of that, Janeway witnesses the worst evil force in the galaxy getting beaten and possibly defeated. And she jumps to the conclusion that that's a bad thing? And then she decides to give this evil force a genocidal weapon so they can save themselves? Seriously, this is like giving WMDs to Hitler because, oh no, They're losing this war. The response would have been to send Species 8472 roses and chocolate. The enemy you know thing doesn't work here because it implies some level of advantage. The Borg will take over eventually if some major force doesn't come in to stop them. So an unknown enemy must be equal to or less than as bad as the Borg, except you, Voyager, have a handy weapon against them. So what should Janeway have done? Wait outside Borg space, let them get destroyed, and dispense the weapon to everyone else. But let's assume she's thinking the Borg is the lesser of two evils, and 8472 will threaten the Alpha Quadrant, and assume the Borg are the only ones who could stop them with the weapon. Then just give them the weapon, because holding on to it and threatening its destruction for your own personal gain is threatening the Alpha Quadrant for your own personal gain. Phew. Yes, I love this episode. The enemy theme is brilliant, and the atmosphere is perfect. You really feel that Voyager has a diminutive presence compared to a galactic war between two monstrously powerful, devilishly evil powers. Species 8472 was brilliantly designed, and while I do feel it was a little early for the more powerful than the Borg card, they did not mishandle it. Despite my rant, it doesn't ruin the episode because I can understand both sides, and I like the emotional narrative of gray area morality going on. Tack out.
Yeah, I really like the idea of just letting them destroy the Borg and then giving everybody else the weapon.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about that too, but the problem is that means that Species 8472 would have wiped out that entire section of space that belonged to the Borg. Everything in it would be dead.
But it's only Borg in it.
But it's still, that's a huge section of space that you would then have to work your way into with this weapon and hope they didn't come up with a way to counter it before you wiped them all out.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think the fact that you can make such an argument, as Tack has done very, very well here, is why we like the episode so much.
Yes.
Because there's a lot to be said for either side of the argument, and why I felt Chakotay kind of represented himself decently in this one, you know.
Right. Right. There's definitely a lot of, you know, what should you do here, and that's always a good thing for an episode.
Okay, that's the end of our voicemails.
All right. Well, as you know, we love feedback, and you can give us feedback via iTunes reviews, emailing us, tweeting us, finding us on Facebook and Google+, and our Treknologic forum. Thank you for listening to our discussion of feedback. Until next time, on behalf of everyone here at Treknologic, love long and prosper.
Love.
Did we mention that we didn't get any iTunes reviews?
Yeah.
But I guess they could discern that from the fact that we skipped right over it.
Why don't you just play the violin music?
No, I'm not going to.
No, we need to say
it.
Here's what I decided. So I decided that, like, maybe this is a scientific experiment.
Okay, cool.
So it is.
The lack of iTunes reviews. It's a test.
And so and you're so refusing to take part in it?
I'm not going to take part in that test.
All right.
Pretty funny.